You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Good evening, everyone. I'm John Borton, and you are tuned to The Wolverine Live. We have, as always, our multi-talented friend, Tom Crawford, here with us that does Press Pass with Jack Ebling on Sunday nights and has his own podcasting network. You know Tom very well, the passionate, intelligent side of the this particular Wolverine Live.
You're kind.
Tom, good to have you back. And, I mean, the news just keeps rolling. It is still football season. It will always be football season, and it, really, the biggest news that Michigan could have right now, I understand the other part, and we're going to talk about the other part, but the biggest news is the fact that one Blake Corum is going to be a Wolverine next year.
That
just means, I mean, just talk about the impact of that.
Yeah, well, let me pre-qualify your intro. I'm not multi-talented. I'm multi-opinionated. You know, I mean, my opinions are probably worthless, but no, that was the reaching in the candy box and getting that, you know, that piece of candy that tastes good, for what's happened with Michigan football, you know, starting, you know, with obviously the Fiesta Bowl and then all the other drama that we've talked about with Harbaugh. I know we're going to address that, but no, that was great. Love that kid. We all like Blake Corum. I mean, for those of us privileged to sit in front, you know, he's sits in front of us at the press conferences post game. When he walks in, that smile is locked in and it never leaves him from when he walks out. And I just what he does to give back to his community, giving, you know, he gets hurt in the Illinois game and the next day he's giving out free turkeys. I mean, this guy is a special young man, a great addition, great football player, resilient kid, and boy, what a dominant backfield that will be with Blake Corum and Donovan Edwards next year in 2023.
There's no question about it. And I've only been doing this for 32 years, but I'll tell you what, in that time, I don't think there has been a better ambassador for Michigan football than Blake Corum. The way he treats people, the way he goes out and gives out the turkeys, the way he runs camps, the way he presents his incredible passion for Michigan football. I don't think, I mean, there have been a lot of guys that represent this program really, really well. I don't think I would put anybody above Blake Corum.
No.
So, that's just away from the field. Now, I mean, the kid was in position to win a Heisman had it not been for that unfortunate injury against Illinois. And, you know, who knows what they do in that TCU game. We'll talk about that disaster as well in relation to the national championship game. But to have Blake Corum back for next year and not just have him back, have him extremely motivated. You saw him on the sideline when his team was playing TCU. You saw him on crutches. You saw him how intense he was and how he was feeling it and with them every step of the way. And now he comes out and talks about how he's going to come back, heal up, and go after everything next year.
Yeah, I heard his interview on Rich Eisen. For those of you who did not, may have searched that in, on your podcast and find out, you know, and listen to it, because it was so genuine. And Rich is a Michigan alumni and a big follower of the program. And so that was kind of cool. And yeah, he's everything you want. I think it's also, let's just get into the decision-making process. I like what Michigan's doing with the NIL approach. This whole different category, one more year, and however that fits into guys that are on the borderline of should I stay or should I go? Because with players getting hurt, obviously, you're trying to make the best decision for your family, for yourself. You put in all that work, being a college football player, eventual NFL football player, such a small percentage and a lot of work. So I'm glad he came back. I think it was a wise decision, a fourth round draft pick, maybe. And when you've come off an injury, you still got NFL personnel people having that little anxiety in the back of their head. You know, how is he going to play out on a regular football field? And now he can prove that in 2023 and say, you know, prove that he's as good as new. And boy, that's for that Michigan running game. Now, if that can convert, his presence can convert maybe a Zach Zinter coming back. And I listen, I'm all bullish on kids making their own decisions. It's their lives. It's none of my business, but that would be selfishly, that would be great. A couple more guys up front to carve holes for Blake would be tremendous.
And the thing is, they can do it now without being relatively broke. I mean, it's a very different world. I liken Blake Corum staying for his senior year to Tyrone Wheatley staying for his senior year in terms of its impact and a great running back, but it's different in this way. I mean, Tyrone Wheatley wasn't looking at a pretty decent sized pile of money if he stuck around Ann Arbor for another year. Yeah. Blake Corum is. I mean, he's going to be taken care of, totally above board and legitimate and all that. And that's how they can do it now. But that it makes a difference, I believe. Here's what I'm wondering, Tom, and I have thought about this in the days since, you know, you saw Donovan Edwards break out and have the two long touchdown runs against Ohio State. You saw him excel against Purdue. He added another 100 yards plus against TCU. Here's a kid that came a whisper away from a 1,000-yard season, and he didn't really get a ton of snaps through the first part of it. Blake Corum at times really carrying the load. I'm thinking to myself, all right, he's thinking, on the one hand, my buddy's back, my teammate's back, let's go, let's win this thing. But a little part of him in the back of his mind had to say, okay, well, what's this do? How's this work?
Yeah, well, great point, JB. You know, in the midst of all this, grass is always greener on the other side. Looking for the other opportunities, maybe another school wants me. I get all that. But I'm telling you what, where, you know, when I watch Georgia and last night, I know we're going to get into that, but I mean, Michigan's receiver core needs help. Okay, and if they could somehow utilize Donovan Edwards in kind of a hybrid position where you spread him out, where he's almost a receiver as much as he is a running back, where you get them both on the field. There's a guy, and I'm going way back, and the young guys are going to say, oh God, here goes Crawford again, going back to the old days. There was a guy named Glenn Doughty who was a starting running back 1969, and he got hurt, and Billy Taylor came in, and Billy Taylor took his job. Well, but Glenn Doughty, you know, wasn't removed from the field. They put him in a wing back position. They ran a lot of counter trays and stuff like that, counter plays. And they got, he stayed involved as well as a receiver. And, I think both of them on the field at the same time, where Donovan can use those stellar pass receiving skills as a dual kind of threat guy. I'm hoping creativity genes get going on that Michigan offense. And they utilize him in that way. I'm sure they will to some extent. He's a heck of a receiver.
Yeah, and great hands. And
wide receiver is a disconcerting situation in my mind, John, because, you know, I mean, Andrew Anthony transferred out. I mean, you know, Darius Clemens was supposed to be the guy. He's going to be the guy next year, but he didn't have a lot of playing time. And I'm just wondering, is it portal time for wideout, or is Donovan Edwards kind of a dual role kind of guy that could fill some of that void.
I think if they find someone in the portal that is looking to have an Oluwatimi type season to finish out, and I mean, Michigan's a pretty good place for that right now. Yeah. But I also think these young guys, these guys that came in last year and were talked about as the freak show, but really kind of everything quieted down when the season starts, as it often does when you're pretty well stocked at a position. I think that they're going to really step forward, and we'll see at least a couple of those guys become much more prominent in the mix, because they're going to need to. Somebody's going to need to. And I think that these guys have the frame and the talent to get that done. Yeah. You know, as far as Donovan Edwards, I mean, he can catch the ball out of the regular running back situations. In addition to, you could get
in addition to the wideout,
use him in the slot.
Yes, to be on. So on point on that, Donovan Edwards should be on the field every snap. Okay, you know, and if Blake wants to take a break, move Donovan over to tailback. Okay, I don't know. Mm-hmm. I'm just throwing that out. I mean, he should get.
Yeah, well,
he should have a great year as a huge part of that offense next year.
They have both earned the right, and if you have two threats of that level on the field at the same time,
oh yeah.
You make it tougher on a defense, no question about it.
Yep.
So,
a lot to think about.
It'd be very interesting to see what they do. But the thing about it is, if they're both on the field at the same time a lot, you better develop a really good third tailback so that, you know, if one of those guys, and you saw it happen to both, if one of them gets nicked up, you're still good to go back there.
Well, yeah, Gash got a scholarship today from walk-on to a scholarship, guys. So number 41, you're on board, you know.
Very
so
good.
Up. Yep.
All right. Well, we've talked about some of the top talent. Now, Tom Crawford, who's going to be coaching him?
Do you want to start out with what I want to have happen? Let me start out with what I want to have happen. I'll be brief about it. I just want Jim Harbaugh to leave. You know, I text and sometimes phone call former Michigan players that I've gotten to know, you know, and I was texting with BJ Dickey today, and it's like, okay, here we go again, death taxes and Harbaugh flirtation with the NFL rumors and all that stuff. And it's just like, it's a fatigue thing. And I really think it's a momentum snuffer, if you will, that he's done this now 2 years in a row. And I think his integrity, the fact he's had he's reportedly had a 2 hour virtual call with an interview yesterday with the Denver Broncos. I'm curious to know where did that take place? Was that from Jim Mechler Hall? Did you do it in your car? Did you do it at your house? I mean, some of these things are just weird. And I'm, you know, as a fan, I'm going to think from a fan standpoint, I just think it's time for him to move on and to keep that outstanding staff and that outstanding culture, mind you, intact. Promote Sharon Moore to head football coach. That would be my druthers. I know Mike Hart would be a viable candidate. And I actually think, John, that Blake Corum is returning because I think he knows that Mike Hart's returning. And I think Mike Hart returning is actually more important to him than Jim Harbaugh returning.
Yeah, that very well could be true. And let me offer a little bit of the other side of it. I get your feeling. I understand if that happens and Michigan was able to keep most of the staff together, I would be okay
with
that.
Would you sign up for that? Would you sign up for that? Somebody put that in a – okay, John, you can have Sharon Moore. The staff is pretty much – might lose one, whatever. Would you sign up for that right now and say deal?
I would say that would be option 1B. Option 1A would be this. Harbaugh gets the big-time deal, okay – you've proven everything you need to prove to us. We're going to rewrite this contract. You've won the Big Ten 2 years in a row.
You did that last year.
I get it. But what I'm saying is that you do it in such a way that he feels an assurance and the type of love that makes up for the 2020 snub. And believe me, I'm a cynic in this regard, because in some ways I see this current Harbaugh situation as John Beilein 2.0. I mean, once John Beilein started thinking NBA, as far as I was concerned, he was going to be gone. And the very next year, after he had the NBA flirtation, he was gone. Okay? It was like that was what he wanted and what he saw as his next step. We know Jim Harbaugh still has an interest in the NFL. Is there anything that Michigan could do to make it such that Jim finally says, you know what, this really is the place for me, has a Bo Schembechler moment?
You know,
because look at you haven't had I saw this came up today, the back-to-back top three finishes in the AP poll. It's been the late 40s in Michigan football since that happened. Look at what he's accomplished. Look at what he has going. And I get it. This is
– in year 7 and 8, he did that, John. In year 7 and 8.
In year 7 and 8. Yep, okay. I understand. Okay. But he's there now. My point is he is there now. And would you rather build on this as long as you can?
He doesn't want to be there. The thing of it is, I don't want somebody who doesn't want to be here. And he's showing that he doesn't want to be here. He's not fully committed. It's like people, you know, you're renewing your vows. Yeah, let's stay married another year, but you know, hey, you never know what's going to happen. I mean, it's almost like it's everything with him is a disclaimer. You know what I mean?
Nobody knows the future, honey.
If I meet somebody else, you know, hey, I might be gone, but you know what? Hey, but let's renew for another year. I mean, as crazy as that seems, I mean, that's what it is. And I, you know, Harbaugh is a good coach, okay? But of those four teams in the CFP, what was the least prepared team? Michigan. Michigan was the least. This dude has lost 6 bowl games in a row, okay? His team got rolled in the Georgia game. I get that last year. They were better. But they had no reason to play like that in that first half. You're down 21-3 to TCU that absolutely got obliterated by Georgia last night. I mean, that game last night where Georgia beat down on TCU was you know, basically a bad look for Michigan. I mean, we heard it all over the place. I mean, what, you know, my God, what, how did Michigan get beat by this team? His team was not prepared. It starts at the head coach, right? If he's getting paid the big bucks, making $10 million a year, starts at the top, right? So, I mean, how?
There's no,
I mean, are you, John, I don't mean, I'm, you know, I respect your opinion. So, but you think this is the best Michigan can do? I guess I have higher standards than
I that. Think this is the best Michigan has done since 1997.
And that's pretty sad.
So, I'm not saying it's the best Michigan can do, but it's not as easy as it looks if you look back at what you've had here, especially in the years leading up to Jim Harbaugh coming here.
But
and,
you know what?
Yep. We say, okay, you're 7 and 8. I get that. But he had Ohio State beat in 2016, and that would have been year one of this type of level of success. And then I think they lost their way a little bit. Defensively, they lost their way. And quarterback-wise, maybe they lost their way. And now they've found those things. And I really think they could have a 4 or 5 year stretch here where they could be playing at knocking on the door, making the playoffs every year. It's going to get a lot easier. We've noted that. But making the playoffs every year and being one of those – one of the handful of teams that is considered a threat to win it all. And I totally understand Georgia looked like it was going to destroy anybody last night.
Well, I get that. And Michigan probably would have, they stay within 28 of them. They would stay within 28 of them instead of whatever that number was. Okay. 58. Okay.
65.
My point is this. I'm a walk in your shoes kind of guy, okay? So I'm the parents of a recruit, a 2024 recruit, or even the 23 recruits that are maybe, you know, coming in at the end of the year, okay? So what am I going to think that, you know, this guy flirted last year, he's doing it again this year, So if he re-inks again, as Michigan just sits there on like a stalled vehicle on the side of the road, I'm talking about administrative-wise, well, waiting for this guy to figure out what he wants to do this year, how much confidence would you have this program is going to stay unified? Because when a head coach leaves, typically a lot of guys go with him. That's kind of how that works. And then if you got an outside hire, you got a complete reshuffle of the deck. You got a complete new offense. The portal is going to be, you know, filling up. And I mean, so walk in the shoes of a recruit right now. So when you're sitting here, you know, on whatever this day is, June 9th, June 10th, whatever this day is, what's in your mindset? You know, I mean, how can you trust this guy when he does not definitively say, I'm not interested in any NFL job? If that's so he believes, he always wants to flirt with it. Okay. Where's the trust in Jim Harbaugh and the parent of a player?
It hurts you. No question. It hurt you last year. It will hurt you this year.
I mean, my God, you're coming off the second Big Ten championship. Your recruiting is pathetic compared to what it should be. I mean, look at Georgia last. And I know Georgia's a – but this is – Michigan cavernously is so far behind them talent-wise. Did you know Georgia, the 85 scholarship kids, they have 65 kids that are 4- and 5-star. 65 out of 85. You get at least got to get a little closer in that, particularly when you're leveraging back-to-back Big Ten titles and CFP appearances. That is being stymied by this flirtation. We should be just all excited, leaping forward. Oh, Harbaugh's got it cooking, but no, we don't know who the coach is. That's how you open it. It's crazy.
I think it undercuts what you're trying to accomplish in terms of building confidence. Now, recruiting wise, I think that NIL is still a bigger factor than Harbaugh in limbo. I do. And I think that they're working on that and bringing it up to a higher level. But those are your two biggest components to build a dynasty for the next 10 years. NIL and a clear-cut, solid, excellent head coach who is locked in and wants to be here just every bit as much as Glenn E. Boschembeckler did when
– Well, we haven't even talked about this little caveat with the NC2A investigation where
– I was about to go there.
It wasn't – I know you're going to go there, but I mean where Jim put – you know, allegedly was not forthcoming. Why weren't you forthcoming? I mean, I don't get that. And I still have trouble with the Mozzie Smith thing. I really do. And that goes on Ward too. I mean, let's just – Why are you just going to cover it up and then all of a sudden you come out with it after it comes out? I mean, why didn't you address it at the time? I don't get that. I struggle with that, particularly when you go and criticize Michigan State, justifiably so, mind you. But then hypocrisy comes back into play when you aren't forthcoming and you know you have something and you quote unquote you know cover it up.
Two things, Mozzie Smith, they dealt with it as soon as the charges were made. They probably felt like they didn't need to deal with it before that because had there not been those charges, it would have just gone the way of a lot of things that get taken care of behind the scenes. Second, Jim Harbaugh, from the people, I'll be interested to see how this is put by the NCAA. But some of the folks were saying it wasn't so much that he was dishonest about something as it was that they didn't like the way he regarded the seriousness of this, that he pushed back a little bit on the whole burger aspect.
Well, and it's silly because we're $5 million, you know, guys get $5 million deals, but it happened 2 years ago, and I guess, but you know, to circle back to it, it's like when I'm watching ESPN this weekend, and all I'm seeing are these scrolls with Michigan, you know, NCAA, blah blah blah, Harbaugh interviewing, blah blah blah. I don't want to see that stuff. I mean, that's not good. That's not a good reflection of the program. Everybody's watching games, and that's what you're seeing in the scroll. And I you know, Michigan shouldn't be dealing with that crap. And it, it all goes back, basically, to him.
I get what you're saying, because when John Beilein left the second time, I mean, after the head fake on the first time, my thought was, good. Okay, good.
Yes, yes.
All right, done. And understand, this is someone that, in my estimation, was the best basketball coach in Michigan basketball history. And there's a part of me, believe me, I get it, Tom, part of me that would say the same thing if Jim Harbaugh moved on. Because if you're really serious, if that's the next move for you, if that's what you want that badly, then I would rather have someone in Schembechler Hall that is completely locked in.
He's done a good job. He's done a good job. And I still go back to that December or whatever that day, 30th of 2014. How happy I was. Everybody was. It was kumbaya. It was a coronation there. And if you had told me at that time that in the next 8 years, Jim Harbaugh would get the Michigan to the CFP twice, I go, okay. A couple of big tens. I mean, I wouldn't be totally happy with it, but that would be all right. But it's just all the crap that goes with it, and then the uncertainty at the end of this year. And you know what's going to happen if Ward inks on something with him and we're back to another deal, it's just going to come back next year. You know, it's just my God, when you have Lovie Smith getting fired after 1 year in the NFL, these NFL jobs are revolving doors. So that flirtation is going to be out there stalking this dude forever, because he has it. He's got an itch. The itch won't go away. So let him fulfill the itch. I think he's done a good job. Move on.
Wonder where Santa Ono's head is on all of this. On the one hand, he wants to win at the highest level. He experienced that this year. I mean, 13-0, you win in Columbus, you win the Big Ten, you make the playoffs, and know that, yes, that's a disappointment at the end. But knowing that the capability is there to – you know, take that next step, make that one more play to get to the championship game.
Yeah.
I think there's probably a part of the president that would like to see Jim in place, but there's also that driving pride in Michigan that would probably say, I want a guy that, not that we're going back after Brady Hoke, but that would walk to across country in Michigan.
I love that analogy. And I'm not saying that you have to have that guy. I don't know how much Jerome Moore, if he's the guy, is enamored being working down there on State Street. I don't know. I mean, he's doing a hell of a job. For people I trust that know way more than me about his performance as a coach, I think he would be a great addition. And the continuity, I mean, you got to admit, John, this culture is so much better than 2 years ago. And that's all that hats off to Harbaugh on that. And he flipped some of his own personal approach on things and made some great hires, okay? But if you can just keep, you know, some level of continuity in that staff, keep this, you know, the recruiting there, and there's some really good players coming back, a great quarterback and J.J. McCarthy, I think that would be good. So, but who knows? We're doing this podcast, or, you know, this live, not a podcast.
Wolverine Live.
Okay, I misspoke myself. Here on a Tuesday night, what does Wednesday morning bring? You know, we just don't know.
Yeah. All right. So let's get back to what we do know, the comings and goings of Wolverines. Give me Tom Crawford's biggest loss of those who would still have eligibility if they chose to, but they're leaving either for the NFL or the transfer portal. What's the biggest loss on offense among that group, and the biggest loss on defense?
Well, I mean, Luke Schoonmaker, I think is a big loss. I mean, I tell you what, when he got hurt in the Fiesta Bowl, that hurt Michigan, because you remember you saw what Georgia did between the seams, you know, between the hash marks with their tight ends. And they got two hell of a great tight ends, okay, mind you. But, and you know, Schoonie could have been involved in that passing game. His presence could have potentially won that game. And so, I mean, I'm just, I mean, there's, I can't, I, you know, I'm trying to think there's probably others that, but he sticks out in my mind because I love the tight end position. I think the tight end position is becoming more prominent in college football strategically. And he, you know, obviously with Colston back, you know, now that'd be a heck of a duel. I love two tight ends and DJ Turner, despite, you know, the missed tackle, didn't he have the missed tackle? That really yes. was that was the play of the game. He's a solid player, man. He's
no doubt.
He is a great player, DJ Turner. No, he's come a long ways, I think, in his development. I've watched him since his freshman year. I've kept an eye on number five, and I guess if I was to pick one on even more than Mike Morris, I think he's a really solid one that would have been nice to have back.
All right, then just to supplement your list, I'm going to go with Mike Morris because I think he was an incredible pass rusher for this team and a real difference maker. Fitting well into the legacy of Aiden Hutchinson and David Ojabo as somebody that could really bring the heat at times. And speaking of Aiden Hutchinson, great first year with the Lions, fantastic job, unbelievable. And on offense, I say it's got to be Ronnie Bell, just because of the leadership that he brought and coming back from the injury, and he made some really big catches, including some down in Columbus. So
and God bless Ronnie Bell is a guy who got back, who can now you know did all that rehab and got back to play and that punt return. And now he's earned the right to go make some money. And I truly believe he's going to make an NFL roster, obviously as Scooney and Turner will as well. So, I understand totally where they're coming from.
So we know that football is about matchups. We know that Georgia's a darn good football team that sits on the top of the football world for the second straight year. Tell me this, though. Is Georgia really that good? And if they are, how the heck did Ohio State have a 2-touchdown lead on them late in the game? And furthermore, is Michigan really that far behind Georgia? 65-7 winners over TCU while Michigan got beat by TCU for 6 points. I don't believe a lot of what I just said is really accurate, but you start to compare numbers and that's what you come up with.
Right, you look at those crazy metrics of I'm comparing the TCU versus Michigan, TCU versus Georgia. I mean, what did TCU get against Michigan? 275 yards on the ground? I mean, think about that for a second, okay? And what did they get last night? 36 net yards, okay? Quentin Johnson, one catch for 3 yards. I mean, Georgia's defense was unfreaking believable. And then with Stetson Bennett, I mean, the guys, I mean, they scored touchdowns in the first 5 possessions, which was crazy. And, I mean, Georgia's been doing this all year. I mean, I go back to 3 particular games that I was zeroing in on at the time when they struggled with Missouri and Kent State. Mid-level MAC. I mean, they played him fairly. They lost by a couple of touchdowns down in Athens, but my God, Kent State, and then Missouri was a close game, maybe like a 4-point game, and then
Missouri had the lead all the way through that game.
That game was the one that could have slipped away, and they probably still could have afforded to lose it, and they still would have won the championship. But and then the Kentucky game was the one I actually saw. That was a 16-6 game. They seem to play to the level of their opponent. This is a team, mind you. 15 guys went to the NFL the year prior. This shows you the magnitude of that game. And I've never seen a football game was the last time that I saw a time or a team that won, you know, had such a huge lead and just destroyed their opponent. They're utilizing their timeouts for curtain calls for their players to come off the field.
Yeah.
I mean, that was nuts.
That's when you know you're pretty good.
That way you're pretty good, but yeah, because the compare and contrast, I know the transitive property doesn't always work, but I saw Michigan versus TCU, I saw Georgia versus TCU, and I know the Ohio State, you know, played, you know, they could have won that game. But one thing about Ryan Day, I will say this, he's a hell of a coach when he's got time. He's a hell of a coach off a rebound, you know. And it didn't surprise me that they played that tough, and they could have won that game. I mean, if Marvin Harrison Jr. hadn't got hurt, I think they would have won that game. And so
that's crazy. Surprising.
A lot
don't
of
even, don't even bring up that disaster doomsday scenario, shall we say.
Yeah. And so, but yeah, the Michigan's got a long way to go, both in talent and also, you know, in preparation, let's say that.
And game day execution. And when I speak of Georgia, you talk about execution, not only in the let's get this right sense, but execution in the capital punishment sense, what they levied onto TCU. That was the football version of capital punishment. And you know what? Those earlier games that you were talking about for Georgia, all of that led to this narrative that said, well, guess what?
Oh, yeah.
Georgia isn't Georgia of last year. They're more vulnerable now. And it was like Georgia walked into that stadium last night and said, watch me.
Well, that's Kirby Smart. And I said this a few weeks ago, Kirby Smart's the Nick Saban. And I wasn't being really profound in that. Probably everybody else agrees with me. He has the approach about aggression. He was really bummed out about how his defense played against Ohio State. And so he challenges defense, aggressiveness. That's what he said. One word, aggressiveness. You know, he said to Holly Rowe on the sidelines, okay? And they like the idea of being the hunter, not the hunted. Even as national champions, they have a chip on the shoulder. He's got this down to a science. And they got a lot of people back next year. My God, they got a soft schedule, softer in the pre-conference than even Michigan. And so they're going to be back. So there's your bar. I mean, you got Georgia probably going to be back. You probably got Alabama's going to slink in there. So you got two of them right there, you know. And so it's going to be tough sledding, but Michigan can get it done if, you know, they know how far they have to leap to get there.
Well, so Michigan in the ESPN's too early look at the top 25 is listed at number 3. Now, I believe that's a very legitimate ranking if, in fact, Harbaugh – you know, stays in place regardless of, you know, all of our qualms about the dalliances with the NFL aside. If he's in place and knowing the personnel that they have coming back, we talked about some of it, I think that's legit. If he goes, all bets are off because you don't know what they're going to do. I am convinced that they will have a plan in place because they faced this scenario last year. But it sounds really good on the surface to, we'll move Sharon Moore into that head coaching job. Players love him. He's obviously put together great offensive lines. He's been an offensive coordinator. He's done this, he's done that. Or, you know, there are other candidates. But until you actually see how it all shakes out, you don't know.
And so we're held hostage here until it happens. You know, I mean, think that the portal deadline, I think that there's the transfer portal deadline, I think was January 8th, but they have a new portal opening. I think it's post spring football. So, I mean, if Harbaugh leaves, you might get portal people, you know, that might happen later in the year. I got to check on that exactly when they can leave. You can still flee to the portal, but yeah, you're right. But the continuity, I tell you what, Ward better have, I hope the heck he's got his plan all set. You know your guy's doing your romancing thing going on, so get ready to, you know, have him bolt and walk out the door. And I just hope he has a plan and ready to move and not let this thing twist in the wind, as I keep saying.
Yeah.
January 18th. Okay, look at that transfer.
January 18th. All
right, I didn't know that. Okay, that's even worse. Okay, so so we're sitting here on the 10th. You got 8 more days. So, oh my God, this is not good.
And let's say we move the head coaches going to the NFL portal to January 10th next year,
or even earlier.
Create one.
But you got to have that Black Monday in there so you can figure out what Harbaugh's going to do, you know, in the NFL, to see if he's going to flirt that year.
We will not ignore Michigan basketball this time. Obviously, they started out 3-0 in the Big Ten, went to Michigan State. If ever there was a game I thought that – Michigan could actually pull out in East Lansing when they're not completely loaded, and I don't think they're loaded with experienced talent at this point. It was that one because Sparty was clanging away for most of that game, shooting just as poorly as Michigan. But, you know, they just got just enough done to be able to hang on and pull away. Michigan made a nice rally to make it a handful of points at the end. But your thoughts on that one and what you've seen out of Michigan of late?
Yeah, it was a slobber knocker. It was a defensive struggle. You know, it was two good teams, not great teams. And I think both these teams are going to be a lot better come February 18th when they return that match in Ann Arbor at Chrysler on a Saturday night. I think both will be better. But, I said on a radio interview on Friday, what locally here, what are the keys to the game? I said, well, you know, Michigan against Penn State had three turnovers the entire game. They had zero turnovers first half of the Penn State game. So they got to be, you know, five or below in the turnover count would be nice. And that, obviously, they had four in the first 4 minutes. And then the other thing I said, they had to hit three from beyond the arc. They were 3 of 20 from beyond the arc. And, you know, Joey Baker is a great addition to this team from Duke. The addition of Joey Baker was to provide some perimeter shooting, okay? And not dependent on one guy, but one of the variables was he had three solid open looks in that first half that could have been bite. Hit two of them, wow, difference maker. They would have won the game, but he didn't. He offered it, and bad shooting. They didn't play very well. And I think for Doug McDaniel, the moment was maybe a little bit too big for that freshman point guard. But Michigan will get better. I like, you know, when I go back to the Central game and move forward from that, John, I think this is going to be doable. I think this team is now I'm back to thinking they are going to make the tournament, but that starts with a win. Well, they got to beat Northwestern at home on Sunday, but this is a really important game Thursday night in Iowa City. This is when McCaffrey out that team. I mean, as a player, the Franz kid. This is an opportunity to win a basketball game. And all these teams are all about the same. I mean, there's Purdue is pretty good. The Big Ten is pretty much everybody, and maybe Minnesota throw out on the back end. Everybody else is about the same. So it's a winnable game. Win these next two games, they're in really good shape.
Don't slight Northwestern because
– No, I'm not saying – yeah, I know that, but that's at home. You got to win home games.
Heartbreaks. I get it, but they have really caused some heartbreak for teams in the Big Ten so far this year. I like your reference to Doug McDaniel learning. I think he will have learned more from a loss in East Lansing than he has in some of these wins in Big Ten play. I just think he's been a really pleasant surprise so far.
Yeah.
And he's growing. I think he'll be a whole lot better in another month of Big Ten basketball. You've got to get consistent effort. I think this team all owned up to the fact that they just didn't have the effort that they should have had against Central Michigan. That hasn't seemed to be a problem since then. But they've got to work some things out. They've got to have scorers step up. You know, we talked last year. How often was it that, okay, who's their consistent outside shooter? And Caleb Houston at times. But now if it's, you know, if it's not Baker, if it's not Jet Howard stepping up, who do you have? And are they going to be a little more consistent? Because you're going to need that, especially on the road.
Yeah, you know Joey Baker, even though he over-fied it from the, you know, total over-fied from the field, he did have five rebounds, so I don't want to totally diss on him. So he did some nice things. But, you know, Jet Howard is going to have to learn that, I mean, he should watch Jordan Poole as an all-around offensive player because he distributes the ball as well as and he's an all-around offensive player as JP. And Jet's got a long way. There seems to be some of those trips down the court, John, when you're watching Michigan, and we saw this particularly in the second, in the first half of the Michigan State game. It's like, what are they trying to accomplish here? It seems like a lot of one-on-one, a lot of desperation. And I think Kobe Bufkin is actually the better leader on this team, all-around player, than Jet Howard is. I mean, Hunter's obviously the leader, but I like Kobe's game. So I think his improvement will also be very important on this team.
Great comment. Really stepping up, no doubt about it. So we're going to leave it there. Tom Crawford on the Wolverine Live. We appreciate you as always. By next week's podcast, I do believe we very could well know the answer to a lot of questions we've been asking tonight, and you might have more clarity. I know we better soon.
All right. Well, it's a privilege to be on the Wolverine Live with John Borton. Until next time, JV.
Yes, sir.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from, with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.